This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Play ball! It's 30 with Murdy with your host, Sweeney Murdy.
Welcome back, everybody. A new episode of me and Eddie C. Ed Coleman with me, Sweeney Murdy here. We're talking Yankees-Mets for the first time in 2021, and after several weeks of inactivity, looks like things are finally kicking in. The Mets made a lot of big news, Ed, but I guess the most recent one we'll start with is a little bit of a surprise, but I guess not really. The Yankees signed Corey Kluber to a one-year deal. He's won a couple of Cy Young Awards, but it's been 3 years now since his best full season. I think there's a little uncertainty there, but universally, this seems to be a move that everybody kind of likes.
Yeah, I like it. I thought that the Mets, and I know the Mets were in on it. They went down, they watched him as well. A lot of teams did, but the Mets were serious about their interest in Kluber, and I understand why too. You know, I don't think you can count on anybody, as you said, Sweeney. He's 3 years removed from his best season, and a great season it was. But at the same time, you know, he's, to me, the type of pitcher who can readapt himself. He never was a blazing fastball guy. He always was more of a pitcher to me. And when he was at his best, it was a work of art, piece of art to watch him pitch. I mean, he was terrific. Now, can that, still be translated into, being a starter who can go out there every 5 days? Well, we'll see. That's obviously the big key, and I don't think the Yankees can count on that, but I think it's a big plus. They need rotation help because there's still a lot of uncertainty there. It may work out okay for them, even without Kluber, but they don't know that, and I think Kluber's great insurance for him right now.
It's a great point about who he is and the kind of pitcher he is, not relying on overwhelming velocity and trying to get that back. I think I probably would have been more excited about it a year ago, let's say. I mean, he signed a deal with the Rangers a year ago. You're adding him on the heels of Gerrit Cole, let's say, and you've got Cole and Kluber atop the rotation. But now, a year ago we were talking about him recovering from a freak injury, being hit on the pitching arm by a line drive. Now we're talking about a little bit of a shoulder issue that derailed what was of his 2020. And coming back from that as well. Listen, I'm all in on his resume. There's only a handful of guys that fit this that are like, the two-time Cy Young Award winners who are still at age 34 going 35, still kind of in their, towards the back of their prime. But I've seen so many of these guys, Ed, and you have too over with the Mets, where you're kind of bringing guys in off of their resume, they're a couple of years removed from it, and you're hoping to rekindle it. Mm-hmm. And for a team that has the championship aspirations the Yankees have, looking for a solid number two, I just would have liked a little more certainty in that number two spot, if indeed this is, as high as they're going with a number two. We'll talk about more later. But I'm a little leery of banking on a guy who is a couple of years removed, as great as those years were.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, you know, when you look at Kluber, I mean, to me, if he can get through this season, I guarantee you there will be some pause in there. There's going to be a time when he goes on the disabled list. You know, either there's some tendonitis in the shoulder, something that crops up. I doubt you're going to see a guy who gives you, you know, 28 to 32 starts. All right. Can you get 20 to 25 out of him? That's what you hope for, I think. And I think if you do get that, then I think most of them will be pretty good. I do think that he's, you know, he's back another step where, you know, I think you can count on him if he can remain healthy. As far as the number two, that's kind of difficult. They have a lot of questions in the rotation. You know, Jordan Montgomery, obviously, I guess, will be in there. Does this mean possibly that you have to count on a Domingo Germán a little bit more than maybe you would like to? That's possible, too. I mean, they're, you know, the kids are in there, too, that you have to consider, I guess, Garcia and Schmidt. And, you know, it's an unsettled rotation as you head into spring training, to say the least.
I think about it was probably about a month ago where you and I are kicking around the viability of Masahiro Tanaka for both New York teams. He's a good fit for both the Yankees and the Mets. A month later now, and we're, you know, roughly 4 weeks away from spring training, he almost doesn't seem to fit either team at this point, at least not at a higher salary number, it would seem. The Mets got a real good number two in Carlos Carrasco, who came over in the Lindor trade. He fits in nicely behind DeGrom. And with the salary that the Yankees have put towards Kluber, it appears Tanaka's, you know, he's not as much of a priority anymore. I wonder if he fits in the salary structure of either team at this point.
Yeah, the Mets could use Tanaka. A lot of teams could use Tanaka. There's no doubt about that. I think the Yankees obviously would be front and center with that. But where they are with the monetary situation at this point, I don't know. And I'm not sure, you know, Tanaka would be that happy and signing a contract that he's not happy with after what he's done for the Yanks thus far. So it's a difficult situation. The Mets, you know, the Mets sit there with DeGrom and Carrasco, now a solid number two, and they also have Stroman, too. Stroman will tell you he's 1A, but he's probably 3 at this point. And then you kind of fill, you know, the rotation out, you know, from there. They may sign another veteran pitcher. I think that's a possibility, you know, before you get to spring training. But they also have Steven Matz in there as well. So, you know, they have some choices. I think their rotation, you know, it's not set, but at the same time, it looks a lot better than what it did before. But getting Carrasco and the Lindor deal obviously was huge for them. And getting Lindor, by the way, was pretty huge, too, for that matter.
It's the biggest move that a New York team has made. And, you know, it's not one of the big free agent signings. Now, it might end up being, because you're talking about a $300 million plus player if you're going to keep him. So maybe that part of the transaction comes later. But the idea of spending Steve Cohen's money hasn't played out the way that we initially thought, at least to this point of the free agent period, because there are still some names out there. But Francisco Lindor, it's hard to make a bigger splash than getting that player at this point.
Yeah, settled in arbitration for, I think, a little over $22 million. So it will tell you what it's going to take to sign this guy. I think he wants to be in New York, and I think they will get a deal done. Now, whether it gets done, you know, before the season, I'm not quite sure. He says he doesn't want to talk about it during the season. I understand that. But at the same time, I've also seen situations where, you know, when a lot of money comes your way, say in July or thereabouts after some talk with an agent that, you know, you can twist a hand and I'll think about it and maybe sign it. But I think the sense that I get is that Lindor, he loves the move himself. I think he's going to love New York. I think New York will love him, and I think things will work out, but it's going to be expensive. I think the quandary the Mets find themselves in, if you want to call it that, is the George Springer situation. But Michael Conforto entered into it as well. Conforto settled for, I think, a little over $12 million or so in arbitration. I believe that that was his number. Yeah, 12.25 in arbitration. He's a Boris client. He's going to.
He'll go to free agency.
He's going to want a long-term deal, and he's going to want a lot of money. Let's put it that way. And he deserves it, too. He had a great season last year, and I think he's just starting to come into his own. We've talked about Conforto and the sweet swing. We were talking about that with Rico Bronya when we had him on our show. You know, he's got a great swing. He's a solid player. He's a solid defensive player as well, too. If you sign him and you sign Lindor, are you going to have room for a Springer contract that's obviously, you know, going to be a lot of money? I guess the telling point to me will be Springer coming down a little bit. If he really does want to play in New York, and that's my sense as well, I think he does want to be a Met. I think he wants to be close to his Connecticut home. I think he wants to be here. But, you know, can they come together? And do the Mets want to go down that road of another long-term contract where they're already going to have a couple of big ones? And I would imagine there's probably a Jacob DeGrom renegotiation somewhere down the road as well, too.
Yeah, I think Conforto is very interesting because if you commit dollars to Springer now, then it obviously, as you said, impacts what you may have available or what you might have to pay to Conforto a year from now. But if you forego Springer with the idea that you have those dollars for Conforto, you have no guarantee that you're signing Conforto because he's not going to be the type of player who signs an extension. Scott Boras usually doesn't get players this close to free agency and then forego free agency. You get to the open market and then sign your best deal. So if you somehow miss on Springer now and pivot in a different direction with an outfielder, you're really rolling the dice and hoping that, I won't say use the term hometown discount because I don't think that really applies, but you're hoping that a little familiarity, I guess, plays in the hands of Conforto and keeping him here is part of the long-term solution.
You know, one thing I didn't realize about Springer that is looking up about him, that he had never played in a full season, had never played more than, I think it was 84 or 85 games in center field. You know, he's played in some corner spots as well. Listen, he's a terrific center fielder. He's certainly better than anyone the Mets have on their roster at playing center field, but he's also getting older too. And if you sign a 5 or 6 year deal with a Springer, you know, what's he going to be like at the age of, you know, 35, 36 at that point? Can he still patrol out there? It's a good question. And again, you know, you're looking at probably a half a season in center field for him with some, you know, corner work as well. So that's another thing I think you have to consider when you're investigating putting long-term bucks into him.
Yeah, and when you think about, you know, he's a pretty big body. You know, guy's going to be – he's 31 now. But a pretty big body to be, you know, banging around a very big center field at Citi Field too. So the long-term prospects of, as you said, playing 120, 130 games at that position, it might not fit very well. We had heard that there were some possibilities of Brad Hand for the Mets, still looking for relief help. That hasn't played out. At the time you and I are talking, that hasn't played out, and Hand is still a free agent. But relief help, still a bit of a priority, even with the additions that they've already made.
Yeah, I think they're going to beef up the bullpen a little bit. Brad Hand would be a great get for them. You know, and again, it, timing-wise, didn't work out. I think the Steve Cohen purchase went through shortly after Brad Hand had been let go at that point in time. If it had happened in reverse, you know, Hand might already
could have claimed him, yeah.
Could have claimed him and taken him at that point. I think they, you know, the Mets probably likely would have. You know, there are a couple of other teams obviously still interested in him, and they should be. Listen, he had a terrific season last year. What do you have? A whip under one, I think, and a 2 ERA and 16 saves in a 60 game season. You know, it's interesting because I think he's progressed and has become a much better pitcher over time. I can remember him with, you know, back at the Marlins or whatever, and always saying, you know, that they used to use him in almost every situation, and it never seemed to quite work out. But obviously in Cleveland, things turned around a little bit for him. So he'd be a great get for him. I think they're still in on him at this point. And if they can nail him down, that might put an end to things as far as what they do.
I just would love, I don't know that Howie and Gary would ever get tired of saying, "Aloha, Mr. Hand," every time he entered the ballgame. Every night, I think that would just be something to look forward to.
Exactly.
So the things we were looking at this morning, last night and this morning, Luis Castillo is a guy who you knew that the Reds would explore trading And they have, and other teams have inquired, because why wouldn't they, right? There was a report from a Latin American reporter last night indicating that the Reds were about to trade Castillo to the Reds, to the Yankees rather, and that's been shot down. John Heyman reporting this morning that Gleyber Torres was part of the ask from the Reds in a talks for Luis Castillo. You know, it would take a lot. He's exactly the kind of guy that I think Brian Cashman tends to go after. Guys who obviously have performed, have some upside still, cost control, a couple of years of control. We've seen him trade for pitchers like this before. When you think about James Paxton or Michael Pineda, it doesn't appear at this time that that's going to happen, but that's about the only way. Like, cost control guy like that is about the only way to fit more starting pitching into this rotation without subtracting salary, maybe Adam Ottavino. But you've seen Castillo a little bit more than I have. He is exactly the type of guy that any team would want to have in their rotation.
Terrific pitcher. He'd be a great get for the Yankees. I don't think that that's a fit. There's no question. I mean, I think he'd fit seamlessly in there. A tough kid, but a smart kid as well, too. And, you know, he's been through adversity, and it's not just because he's in Cincinnati. You know, he's actually pitched pretty well at times and suffered, you know, either from a lack of offense. And he's also gone through some tough times with giving up a lot of home runs. But, you know, he's pitched through that. You know, to me, I he's got a wealth of talent. He's still very young. I don't think he's hit his peak at this point. So that's a guy that, you know, if the Yankees could get, it'd be great. Listen, I think he'd work in seamlessly with them, and he'd fit in that rotation. He'd be, you know, right behind Gerrit Cole, as a matter of fact. Then you can push Kluber down and push some of the others down as well, too. But, you know, I'm kind of with you. I don't know whether that's going to come to fruition or not, but I think you're right. I mean, you think that's exactly the kind of guy that you could use in this rotation.
Yeah, and it doesn't appear that that's happening now. Meanwhile, something I said earlier, I guess I did inadvertently knock Marcus Stroman down a couple of pegs, but Carlos Carrasco is a legit number two type of guy. We've seen him put up some really good postseason games. He's you know, he's seen a pitch for the Indians for a few years, and he's already seems to be embracing the idea of pitching in New York and pitching for the Mets.
We had Zoom calls with both Lindor and Carrasco, and you couldn't talk to two nicer guys and two happier guys to be in New York as well, too. Both of them, listen, they spoke effusively about Cleveland and leaving Cleveland. They hated to, you know, they became close to the Indian fans. And I think one of the Indians people said, well, you know, we just traded our two favorite players, you know, basically, you know, our two most popular players. And I can understand why, because they both have engaging personalities. Carrasco, they call Cookie, and Mr. Smile with Lindor. And that's pretty much all they did through the Zoom calls entirely. So, you know, getting those two aboard, I think they're going to play tremendous in New York. And, you know, you look at, you know, just Carrasco per se, you know, his best year was, I think, probably 2017, the same year as that Kluber had. But, you know, he's been through and battled leukemia, came back from that. He pitched very well last year. You know, I think, you know, the world's right there for him. I mean, he can take off with a Mets team that can obviously score him some runs. And I think he'll get deep into games. And I think we know what Lindor can do as well, too. So, you know, both guys coming aboard, that's a plus-plus, big plus-plus for the Mets.
We talk a lot about character guys when you talk about, you know, not just sports, but also in New York. I mean, Carlos Carrasco has won the Roberto Clemente Award, comeback player of the year, what you're talking about. I mean, there's a lot of heart in that guy, and I think Mets fans are going to enjoy seeing him pitch. Stays healthy this year. I think it's a good fit there. Meanwhile, I keep remembering this one of the fun stories about Francisco Lindor. This is probably from about 3 or 4 years ago. Brody Chernoff, who is the son of general manager Mike Chernoff and the grandson of our boss, Mark Chernoff, was in the radio booth with Tom Hamilton during a spring training game and just talking. You know, I forget how old he was at the time, maybe 5, 6 years old. And he was, you know, Tom Hamilton's trying to interview a child during a game, right? So you never know what kind of answers you're going to get. And Hamilton says something like, "Hey, what's your dad working on now?" And Brody spits out, "He's trying to sign Lindor to a 7-year deal, I think." just let the cat out of the bag right there. And Tom Hamilton lost it on the air and said, okay, I think we better just move along here before I get someone in trouble. So that deal never happened. And that is in large part why he is today a New York Met. And that clip is online somewhere. It's still one of my favorite stories.
Well, that seven-year deal is probably in the works in a different place right now.
At least seven.
I would think so. Anyway, at this point, that's the other thing about Lindor. Just as an aside, probably the best contract that the Mets have signed long term. Listen, they had Piazza. I understand that, and there have been terrific guys that they have gotten over the years. But in recent vintage, the Carlos Beltran deal probably worked out best for them. It was a seven-year deal when he signed when he was 28 years old, and that's where Lindor is. He's 27, right. I believe, and that's when you want to. If you're going to sign somebody to that kind of deal, that's when you want to. From the 27 to 35 or 28 to 36 years, that's what you're looking for at that point, and you've got him during his prime. With Beltran, I always felt that you probably got 4.5, maybe 5 years out of the seven that were top years for him, and you're probably not going to get the full benefit of the contract, but at the same time you get the most out of a guy when he's in his prime, and that's exactly what you want to do.
And if you sign Lindor, I think he's already, without having played a game here, I think he's the face of the team, because I think there is an expectation that he is going to sign here and be part of this long term, as you said, for a good 6-7 year run of prime time player. With all due respect to Jacob deGrom, and it's a little bit different than, say, David Wright, because he's not a homegrown player, but you're talking about an absolute star in the game, and this is a guy that you're going to just expect to be here. I think he's already the face of this team.
Yeah, well, it always helps to have a player who plays every day. And that, like you said, it's no knock against Jake, but a pitcher is out there every 5 days. Jake right now, and has been since David retired, he's been the face of the franchise, and he's still the star and will be the star. He's a great pitcher. But when you're a regular everyday player and you're out there every day, that's, you become the face of the franchise, and he obviously will.
I love the Mr. Smile, because I think the Yankees have a guy, if he didn't already have a great nickname in the machine, you might call him Mr. Meh, because DJ LeMahieu doesn't really show you anything facially, no expression. He is just, as Gary Sanchez put it, he's the machine. And the Yankees got him back on a really, really friendly deal, team-friendly deal, because at $90 million over 6 years, as opposed to four for 100, which he probably could have commanded easily in a normal year, or as I've been saying, I've been saying 5-125 would have been a really good and decent ask and get on his part in a normal market. We were not in a normal market. He got $90 million, which is around Josh Donaldson money. He gets it at age 32. I was told the number is more important than the years for him. So the fact that he stretched it out and benefited the Yankees, it helped both sides. We say this all the time, Eddie, when we see guys and say, well, this player is going to age well, because we can see, but you never foresee things that happen. Nobody really ages that well. They all, take turns at certain points. It's just a matter of when. So I don't know that I can say the Yankees are getting 6 great years out of DJ LeMahieu, but they're built for 2021 right now with Gerrit Cole and LeMahieu in his peak, and Aaron Judge still a couple of years before free agency, and Gleyber Torres still a couple of years before free agency. So just getting him signed was important, and they did that.
Yeah, listen, I hope, I love his game, so I hope he stays healthy for the entire 6 years, and makes the Yankees smile for the next 6 years as well too. Like I said, I love his game. He's a hitting machine, but to your point about staying healthy, Daniel Murphy was a guy who was a Met, went on, obviously ended up in Colorado after being with the Cubs and that. And Murph, has always been a hitting machine, but the last couple of years have been tough, and why? Because of injuries. His knee really kind of gave out. Now I think LeMahieu is built a little bit differently than Murph, but at the same time, you never know about that. You say, well, this guy's a natural born hitter, he'll hit forever, and I guess that's true if you're healthy. That's right. The thing, and Murph could not stay healthy, and to me, I think he's he's thinking about retirement. I think he will. Nobody has scooped him up, obviously. If LeMahieu does stay healthy, that's a great get on a team-friendly contract, as you mentioned, for the Yankees. And I hope he does. He's fun for baseball. He's good for baseball. Yeah, I think baseball needs more guys that, you know, can use the whole field and just spray hits all over the place, as opposed to, lifting balls out of the ballpark and striking out like, you know, a lot of guys tend to be at this point in time. But LeMahieu's, he's fun to watch, no question.
As you and I speak, it's January 18th. About a month from now, we should be grumbling about the monotony of the workouts the pitchers and catchers are going through, waiting for some spring training games. And at this point, I think that is still the plan, but I think we're still a bit away from making that a reality. I don't know that it's going to get off the ground on the day that they say it's going to. If it does, I think it's going to look a lot like it did last summer. I think we're still a pretty good bit away from anything that looks like it, like we're used to it looking like.
Yeah, you know, to me, Sweeney, there are a lot of ominous signs going on right now. You know, and I understand baseball. Baseball has gotten some pressure because we just watched the NFL games this weekend, the four games, which have gotten you down to the NFC and AFC title games. And the NFL is going to make it through the Super Bowl, which, I give them a lot of credit for. Now, have they had some problems? Yeah, they have, but not overwhelming. But in the NBA right now, which just kind of started to pick things up there, you know, 10, 12 games or so into the season, there have been a lot of cancellations. I mean, over the weekend, there were many cancellations of games. The NHL just got underway. They've already had a couple of cancellations. They just started, you know, this prior week. So, you know, is that going to continue? If it does, that, to me, that's obviously going to have an effect on baseball and when you start and how you start. I get it. The players want to play 162. Can you push it back a month and still do that? I guess maybe you can. But, you know, we also ran up against the problem last year where, you know, the owners, they wanted that postseason in October. They wanted to get it in there and make sure before the next wave came. So there are a lot of things to weigh at this point in time. And I get where both sides are at this point, but it's going to take a little conciliatory nature here, I think, to get this thing done. And that's never been a hallmark of this sport or either side, especially with a new CBA on the horizon at the end of the season. But, that may be called for, and they may be called upon for that.
Yeah, that's the hard part, is that these guys do have to negotiate everything that they're going to get to. And we saw how hard that was last summer. I guess they had time last year. That was the thing. They had time, and it still took all of the time. And it's still, you know, they were probably never going to start any earlier than what they did, given where we were, really countrywide, nationwide, with everything that was happening. We were probably never going to start any earlier than late July. But the fact that the negotiations just dragged that was really the thing that I think hurt a lot of people and turned them off. And I think we're headed to that a little bit again, because, you know, we're not going to start a month from now without a lot of negotiating. And you really haven't heard a lot of that rhetoric yet. And it's going to start sometime soon, you would think, after we get past this holiday weekend and know that we're only a couple of weeks away from players wanting to report to their spring training facilities.
Yeah, I mean, keep in mind, most guys, you know, spring training is going to start in the middle of February or so, but most guys get there early these days, right? And on top of that, getting the equipment, getting everything set, that's a couple of weeks prior to that. So you're not that far away from things kind of kicking into gear to get everything ready for spring training. This isn't just the middle of February. Oh, let's everybody show up and all at once here. This kind of is a process over the next, you know, couple of weeks, 2-3 weeks. So, some decisions I think are going to have to be made, and probably fairly soon, as to exactly how this is all going to come about.
I got one last important question for you. Which camp do you fall in? Are you rooting for Tom Brady, or are you rooting against Tom Brady?
I can never root against Tom Brady. It's tough watching him in another uniform, and he's a different quarterback, and it's a different team for that matter too. But listen, he was pretty good yesterday, and better than Drew Brees for that matter. But I root for Tom. I did see there was a little on Instagram, I believe, this morning. I don't know if you saw it. He and Brees meeting after the game on the field, mm-hmm. and Brady actually turned around and one point threw a touchdown pass to one of Brees' kids in the end zone, and they kind of hugged and went their way. One goes to the NFC title game, the other goes to retirement, and I don't think we feel sorry for either one, but it was fun watching him yesterday. And Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, that's pretty good viewing, I think, next weekend. That'll be a lot of fun.
I got to tell you, I found myself during the course of the game, the other game yesterday, rooting for the Browns. You know, they're behind, yep. and I'm wanting them to yep. come back and kind of, you know, they're the Browns. You know, we've already seen the Bills win and get there. How great would Buffalo and Cleveland have been? But I had no idea this guy was still in the leagues. I don't follow as closely, but Chad Henne, I could not believe this. And this guy broke my heart once. In 2005, Penn State is undefeated at the Big House in Michigan, and Henne leads this last-minute drive. And with no time left on the clock, he hit Mario Manningham. And there was another play, a weird officiating call. I'm blanking on it now. But it allowed them to get one last playoff. And with no time on the clock, Henne hits Mario Manningham for a game-winning touchdown. It's the only game Penn State lost that season and cost a chance to get into the championship game. But what I also vividly remember is that is October 2005. In December, we're at the winter meetings, right? And there's a press conference to promote the 2006 WBC. And Derek Jeter is up on the dais with the rest of a couple of other Team USA guys. And Derek Jeter's a huge Michigan fan. So, mm-hmm. I never see him during the course of the college football season because it's, usually when Penn State and Michigan play, it's usually later on. Or it's playoffs or whatever, and it's hard to chit-chat about that. So this is the first time, probably about 2 months after the game, that I've seen him since Michigan beat Penn State. I'm standing in the middle of a hotel ballroom on a riser, probably about, 100 feet from the dais. And as Jeter sits down, he's kind of eyeing the room, glancing the room. And all of a sudden, he sees me on the top of this riser, and he just starts laughing. And he holds his fingers like this far apart, says, "So close." Like, oh, man. Couldn't get away from it. But Chad Henne broke my heart that day. And then 16 years later, I watch him do this. I'm going, this guy's still around? Oh, my. And one of my closest friends from Penn State is also a huge Cleveland Browns fan. I'm going, this guy broke his heart again.
He's in the witness protection program, Chad Henne. I mean, nobody knew exactly where he was. How about if you're Cleveland, you're sitting there today saying, Chad Henne, 3rd and 14, and this guy runs for Are you kidding me? That's all we had to do was stop Chad Henne from getting 14 yards. Oh, Lord.
Oh, man, I watched that game go. I was getting bad flashbacks, man. That was terrible.
Sorry.
Yeah, listen, it's going to be a fun weekend of football next weekend, and you and I will do this again soon, maybe sometime for the Super Bowl. Maybe we'll talk a little Super Bowl, and maybe we'll have a little bit more movement. George Springer and maybe some other possible targets will come off the board. Trevor Bauer is still out there, but we'll be here again. Thanks for joining us, everybody, here. It's me and Eddie C., and you're on the 30 with Murdy platform on radio.com, Apple Podcasts. Subscribe and review. Go check out some of my last couple of episodes. I spoke with Robert Kamen, the screenwriter of the original Karate Kid, about the Cobra Kai series. Also spoke with Bill Pulsifer 25 years ago. He was part of Generation K. You remember that, Eddie. Yeah, he speaks a lot about, well, really, he's a big part of why there are now pitch counts and innings limits. What happened to Generation K is kind of why Blake Snell happened last October, and that's a good conversation there as well. So please check it out at the radio.com platform, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. He's Ed Coleman. I'm Sweeney Murdy. Thanks for listening. Oh, O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
It's not just about watching the game, it's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it, it's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.